This podcast is brought to you by Refix, a natural and organic isotonic drink containing 78 sea minerals. It's available on Amazon UK now, and it's heading to the shelves of all major health food retailers and pharmacies soon. Oh, that is nice.
It is nice. It's really good, though, because when I was talking to the guys at Refix, it kind of marries very well with our brand, because not only is it replacing like your normal kind of sugary isotonic drinks with something that's all natural after training, but also for like things like hangovers.
Important, like, for our clients.
Yeah, super important for our clients.
Because a lot of them are hungover.
They love drinking and training.
The flavours are good. That one we've just had now, what is it?
That one's orange and they've got lemon. And then they're bringing out Extreme Hydration, which is mixed with coconut water as well as seawater, because they get the minerals that would normally be added in to a...
Floating around in the sea.
Exactly. They just pull it out of the sea. 78 of them.
It's filtered very, very well.
And it's the Spanish sea as well. So...
The cleanest.
Special. Special sea. And also they do things to help the planet. They do regular beach cleans, they help tidy up our oceans. It's just a great drink and great people, so we're happy to be partnering with them for this podcast.
Our lovely listeners can buy Refix with a little discount, can't they, George?
They can. It is BTL15, and you type that into the discount code on the Refix website and you get 15% off.
That is BTL15.
Refix, seawater, sea hydration. Extra slurps. Is that
Sorry,
you drink all the time?
Super slurpy. Hey guys, before we get into this episode of Before Lights podcast, here at Before the Lights, we are super supportive of all our friends who are actors and their strike with the Screen Actors Guild. Therefore, we've held on to some of these episodes until the strikes are finished. So some of the stuff they say might be dated or it might have already come out, but we're super grateful for the time they've given us and it's still super interesting chat. So yeah, have a listen and enjoy.
Hey, I'm Dave Hasty.
I'm George Ashwell.
I'm Josh Betteridge.
And I'm Georgia Canavan. And we are Before the Lights.
We work with actors and teams behind the scenes in film, TV and sport to keep their mental and physical health ticking over on and off screen.
On this podcast, we talk to some of them about how they get the most out of their mind and body and everything in between.
Well, I'm going to do the start now.
Are you?
Yeah. Right. It gives me great pleasure. Without further ado, actually, that's what I have to say.
Just has to.
I'd like to introduce the guest for today's episode, director. I'm going to give you your full like working title, Sam H. Freeman.
Yeah, thank you.
Why do you have a H?
I know, and like I always thought that I'm not like the kind of person who would like put an initial in and always feel a little self-conscious about it. But there was another guy called Sam Freeman who was writing stuff, and he already got there.
Literally beat you to
and
it.
So
I thought you were just going to be like, but you just needed to jazz it up a little.
that's the thing that I don't want. So my middle name, the H stands for Hickey.
Hickey.
That's your middle name.
Hickey. Yes, my middle name is Hickey.
Oh wow.
It's more like two surnames. Yeah. It's like an Irish surname.
People always
used to be like Hickey, like a love bite, so I always felt a bit self-conscious about it. But I feel like I've moved into a place where actually I quite like it now. Mm. So I'm wondering, maybe one day I might just go Sam Hickey Freeman rather than Sam H. Freeman. I might just change it.
I like it.
It's like Samuel L. Jackson.
Well, Why is it that there's just lots of Sams and Samuels? Because the only other time I know it is the middle initial being needed is Samuel Jackson.
Such a common name, isn't it? There is like...
When else is an initial needed?
You're talking to a George and a Dave.
Yeah, it's true. Like, two Georges and a Dave.
Yeah, there's a lot.
Two Georges and a Dave in here.
Pretty bog standard names. Fans of industry will have come across your work.
Yep, first season, did a bit on that.
Yeah. I think because we were made aware. That's a weird way of saying made aware. But I remember Connor McNeil was talking about you.
Mm-hmm.
All nice things.
And Julie cast it as well.
And Julie Harkin.
So that was another link.
She was how you ended up coming in to see us, wasn't she, Julie?
Yeah. So Julie was casting the film that I just shot. Every time I saw her, I was always just like, you look amazing. Like, she just looks amazing. She walks into a room, like the hair and just
She's
like
glowing.
Everything. Yeah. And then at a certain point, because on the film, both actors needed to kind of change their, but they sort of needed to swap body types actually. And I remember Julie called you up because Nathan had just been on a show where he was really bulky and we kind of needed him to be a lot slimmer.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
And we didn't have that much time. I think she called you to say, how possible is this? And you're like, well,
it's all doable.
It's all doable. And so that's how she'd mentioned, like, she worked with you guys and she always recommended people. And I was like, well, if that's where you go, that's where I need to go. And that I think I emailed you the next week. And here we are.
A lot of people will listen to this and be like, well, why does a writer need to go and exercise? Like, why is that important?
But that was kind of the main reason why you came in. It wasn't it wasn't necessarily to change from an aesthetic point of view at all, or even to become stronger or anything. It was more, I remember you saying, it's like, you know, this job's going to be quite intense, and the physical and mental stress that was going to put on you, that was something you were aware of.
Yeah, it was all, I mean, it's all anyone talks about when you're going in to work on your first feature, people, you know.
Well, that's the thing,
like,
it's like,
prepare yourself for how, like, you don't know how exhausting this is going to be. And I just kind of looked at myself and thought, I don't think you are.
This guy isn't ready.
Were you literally looking in the mirror going, this guy can't handle it?
No, I don't know. I come from, like, before this, most, I mean, I've been a writer mostly. This is, I kind of just moved into directing. This is the first film. And as a writer, you're quite sedentary. I was just sat behind a computer using snacks as a way to, like, take a break from, like, you know, being frustrated with writing. Do you know what I mean? You sat in front of a computer and you're like, what can I do to distract myself from actually trying to do this?
Yeah.
I know, I'll go for a walk and, like, get something to eat. And then, you know, you don't sort of notice it happening, but eventually you kind of look in the mirror and you're like, whoa.
Yeah.
And I wasn't moving at all.
I think you were really aware of all these things, though, like, working with you about putting in systems, looking after your stress levels. That's something you were really focused on.
I'd had a little bit of experience because writers' rooms are the worst for this kind of stuff. Because,
can you explain what a writer's room is for people that might not know?
So writer's room is usually for television. When there's a series, you know, you're doing, it's like, what, you're 8 to 12 episodes in a season, you don't have one writer writing everything. You should have a lead writer who created the show, who kind of runs it. But you bring in writers, and quite often at the beginning of that, we'll have a room where we sort of create the series together. So you map it all out, you put all the plot beats on a board, develop the characters together, and then you all take individual episodes that you then sort of own.
Is that so that the work can get done?
Yeah.
Or is that to kind of give variance?
Is that what you did on Industry, just out of
context? That's what we did on Industry. So we had like a 6-week room, and we really went from the beginning of the show and looking at it, because quite a lot changed from when we started on it. The characters, even the name, like, a lot was very different, and we kind of spent 6 weeks developing it, looking at it, putting things on a board, taking things back off the board, until we sort of found something that we thought was kind of exciting and full. For Industry, you know, we really studied they had two scripts that they'd written already, and you really study what they're doing and try and kind of get yourself into the mindset of that and the voices of the characters, how they write them. It's not really about you trying to put your own voice onto it, because you don't want it to kind of stand out in that way. And then usually once you've finished, you hand back to the lead writers and they do a pass on it, where they kind of go through it and go, like, okay,
take you out of it
in a way. They'll look and be like, how do I make this consistent?
Is it like getting your work marked at school,
kind of? But you know, you go in and you know, like, that's, everyone knows that's part of the job, and you go
expecting that,
and that's what the show needs, because otherwise you will watch it and be like, oh, that episode felt a bit weird. Or,
and in these rooms they just have one big table full of snacks.
And I at the beginning of Industry, I think it was all, and it really, really affected our energy levels, because at the beginning it was all like sweets, sort of little candies, and even, you know, kind of chocolate covered nuts or whatever, but everything was sugar. And like midway through the afternoon, you would just be like, wow, it's really exhausting being in the writer's room. You know, I wasn't thinking about it so much at the beginning. You'd be like, wow, it really knackers your brain out, because it is quite intense. But actually, at a certain point, I think we requested, or we all realized, and they changed up the snacks, and it became more kind of vegetables and hummus and stuff
that's going to give you some actual
sustain, and it completely changed
that's
the
so
way
interesting
we worked. And now I would be, anytime in a writer's room, I'm really wary, or get quite nervous actually if there's too much sugar on the table, because it really, like, and it messes with your mood as well.
Well, it's like your blood sugar literally just, like, is going to rocket up and down.
Yeah, you feel really miserable at the
end
of
it. The mental energy of it is immense.
But you are sat the whole day, and I was not, I mean, I really wasn't doing any kind of exercise, and that in itself ends up, I think, really contributes to your exhaustion levels, because you just don't feel very good.
But you also, you become so unresilient to life. So, like, as soon as you then have to do something, you're fucked. Like, you're just literally, oh my God, that was way too much moving. All you've done is walk out, because you've had to, oh, one of us has got to go get the bottles of water today. So you're running at the bottles of water for everyone, and you're then knackered. But if you build up that's what training is. It's basically building up your resilience to everything else you got to do. You kind of had that perfect storm of knowing enough about what our director does that you were kind of scared of it, or had everyone telling you, that it was going to be really hard, mm-hmm. but also not really because you'd never done it before, knowing exactly what you were going to put yourself in for. So mm-hmm. I think you reacted quite well to that information rather than just sheer panic. You were like, all right, let me find out if anyone can help me mm-hmm. get ready for it.
No, and it really, I mean, I think it absolutely would have been a very different experience if I hadn't come to you guys first, because it is just completely full on, and being able to just... changing up my energy levels before we started made mm. such a
it was kind of fun experience. To see you ride the wave,
yeah,
because we saw you all the way up until what was it, last week?
Yeah, and then once and we then were filming now. I disappeared for a bit and then yeah came back, but you met me as it was all kind of like it was all hitting home, wasn't it?
Weirdly really good mobility for someone really, who's
really,
never...
really mobile.
Yeah, for a writer, right? I remember I was very proud of that. Everyone's like, well, you can really like move for someone who literally doesn't move.
You just popped a squat
for your
like,
job
hello.
At all. I think, yeah. Yeah, that was a point of pride.
Naturally gifted.
Can we go back and talk about like the start of doing the short Femme? Mm-hmm. It features two of our previous podcast guests.
Yeah, which I didn't realise. Well, actually,
and
I met
gym,
Papa.
Gym members.
I saw Papa... I met my pop out at the gym like a while ago, mm-hmm. but actually just saw Harris the other day and was like, oh wow, everyone's here.
It is big one big incestuous family. Yeah. We're all in there, all in that basement.
Gross.
It's a great way to describe
it's
it.
It's true. Everyone knows everyone from really, really weird places.
So I suppose, as you said, going into the feature, I didn't, you know, there was a lot to learn. I knew a little bit about it from making one short film, which is a very unusual story, I think.
Yeah, that's like super interesting. They're like how it's not a typical path, is it? That you and your writing, directing partner mm-hmm. made the short. It did really well. What's the process there from? Is it you guys going, shall we give it a stab? Or were people like, this is great. You should think about making it into a feature.
No, we actually, the idea at the beginning was to make a feature. That's how, was how it started out. And we took it to some producers who I had a bit of a relationship with before, and he'd wanted me to write something for them, but also had this kind of keen interest in turning writers into directors. When you're writing for screen anyway, you spend the whole time imagining it on, you kind of do a lot of that work naturally when you're writing it because you were writing for a visual medium. Mm-hmm. And so actually quite often you realize that when you're coming to it, the vision is kind of there and you do know what you want. So we went in and Ping and I have been friends for a long time. So sort of as I was a screenwriter, he's a theater director. We kind of felt like as a duo, we've got both the elements of a film director, despite having never been to film school or kind of have done anything. I mean, we taught ourselves a lot through YouTube.
Really?
Like kind of YouTube film school. Yeah, just no just way. Like, no you way. Just go like...
You can learn anything on YouTube.
Literally. Like, top 10 one-shots in film, and then you just watch it. And you know what I mean? Like
How good was the YouTube school?
I mean, it got us you here. So yeah. It's not going to be too awful.
Don't go to school, kids. Yeah. Just go on YouTube. That's literally what all of them are doing.
We had this idea for a feature film, and pitched it. We wanted to write and direct it, and they really loved the idea, but we're also like, you're crazy if you think someone's going to give you, it's like millions to make a film. Mm-hmm. No one's going to put that money in your hands.
Two guys that have watched some YouTube videos.
Yeah,
exactly.
Yeah,
yeah, here you go.
I already told him that as well.
They've got a good idea and they've watched a couple of YouTube videos on making a film. No one's going to do that. So we're going to like, but what they did do is, because they liked the idea, we're going to take a chance and we're going to produce a short film for you that will be like a proof of concept for your feature. Mm-hmm. And we'll put the money behind it. But that was what it was always intended to be, a way to prove that we could make a film, and set out to make that and wrote a script and sent it out to some people. We were incredibly lucky to get Papa and Harris.
I mean, I was going to say, like, I know a lot of actors do short films and you don't often see short films. Like, it's not like in the public eye, all these mm-hmm. hundreds of short films, but to get two amazing actors in one short is quite a coup, right?
It was sort of insane. That was sort of down to our producer, Sam, being like, the worst thing that can happen is they say no, so why not shoot for the stars?
Yeah.
Like,
yeah.
Who do you want?
Did Julie cast the short as well?
No, she didn't. She came on for the feature. Uh-huh. It was Sam really running things and just kind of sending the script to the agents, some relationships, and you know, just getting them to read the script, and they both really responded to it and were like, yeah, we're up for it. And we really like couldn't believe what was happening, to be honest.
Could you give us, just for the listener, the blurb?
So it's the story of a guy called Jules, who's a drag queen, and one night after a performance he's the victim of this horrible homophobic attack, which kind of destroys his sense of self, and he's sort of unable to go back to drag. Months later, he re-encounters his attacker at a gay sauna, and this guy doesn't recognize him because he's not in drag, but he obviously realizes that this guy who attacked him is deeply closeted, and so he insinuates himself into this guy's life in order to take revenge.
I can't wait to watch it. I literally just like 2 days ago before Sam came in, I was like, can I have a link to the film, please? I really want to watch it before you come in because I want to talk about it. And actually, I just want to go to watch the film. So, yeah, we're waiting. We're waiting for that.
Oh, it's really exciting.
Yeah. They haven't. I actually don't even have a link to it at the moment. We should have some news soon, I think, because they're doing the kind of distribution chats now.
Yeah.
Because it did amazing. It was the hidden gem I read in one. One magazine, the hidden gem of Berlin Film Festival.
It did really well, actually. Like, we were really, really happy with how it went down. Because absolutely terrifying. Because we finished it a week before the festival, so they'd sort of accepted it in a half-finished state.
This is a period where you were working, like, flat out.
Yeah.
Because you'd come in to see us, because the sound studio is literally on the same street as us.
Yeah, so I, like, timed workouts.
So you'd be like, I can get in at this time and do this, and then the rest of your days were just like
you're never gonna make it
non-stop,
gradually getting less and less sleep each time I came in, like 5 hours 4 hours,
because I didn't realize that's another part of it that I didn't realize. Once you finish filming, there's so much work to do from your point of view.
I mean, you spend a lot more time in post than you actually ever do on set. It's 5 weeks we spent filming. It was 6 weeks actually, because in the middle of it the two leads got COVID, and our post schedule was actually quite short compared to a lot of films. But we probably spent like at least 20 weeks in post.
Yeah.
So that's the filming four times over, really.
Yeah. 6 months. You spoke earlier about like you went from doing the short film and then into the first feature. So that's your first experience of a short film to a feature film. Is it a big jump, or is it something that, you find you can manage?
It is, but it's only in terms of scale. You are essentially doing the same thing, but just for longer, bigger and for longer. There are more people on set. There is, you know, there's more to think about because you have a bit more money, although you're stretching it out for a much longer period. Yeah. So in a way, it's not actually as different as you imagine it's going to be. But yeah, it's a bigger set and the stakes are higher. You know, short films are the training ground, I suppose. You are essentially doing the same thing. I think we took to it pretty well. We went in expecting the worst. That's why I came to you guys. Because I was like, this is going to, I don't think I'm going to be able to take this on in my like current physical shape. So I think I was really like preparing myself for the worst.
Something that I think about when it comes to like applying what we do in the actual acting world and creative world is like putting people in uncomfortable positions, such as being on a VersaClimber or lifting weights or whatever. Does that ring true to some extent, like experiencing discomfort and something that's difficult? And knowing, like, from a gym session, you're like, oh, I did that. And you've got stretched budget and you're trying to get something finished by a certain time. But you're like, I know that I can keep working. I know that my body's capable of keeping on going and it's not going to drown me.
There's definitely something in that, because it can be, you know, when things are going really well, it's the most fun. Mm. And then, you know, every day on a set, there's something that goes wrong. One day the camera refused to turn on. You're like, right, that's like half a day out. We can't lose half a day. We don't have time in the schedule.
Yeah.
And you just have to make a choice that you're like, okay, well, that's happened. We're just going to keep going.
Have you got things that you do to kind of manage stress levels? Like, do you have anything where you'd be like, right, this is really stressful. Today's going really badly. Do you have like anything like sitting and going through breathing practices or anything like that?
Yeah, I definitely notice that when I am really anxious or stressed, I've started to realize that if I think about it, I've always stopped breathing.
Everyone does it and it's mad. Because it's like, why does the human body go, stop breathing? That'll help.
There was quite a few times I remember on set where something had gone really, like we were really up against it and something had happened that meant we were going to now lose half an hour while something had to be fixed or changed, or where I'd sit by the monitor and go, okay, breathe in, breathe out.
Yeah.
And just think about that for a while. Because actually, sometimes you were prepared for anything else. There was nothing else to do. You could go chat to the actors again you know. But actually, we were ready to go, and it was just waiting.
Yeah.
And breathing, I think, is...
So taking yourself, removing yourself from that moment.
And just kind of telling yourself that actually, in this moment, this anxiety is pointless. Because it's not making anything go faster. Sometimes anxiety can be really useful because it propels you in the right situation. But sometimes it's completely pointless. Mm. It's a reaction that you're having, and you're actually just making the whole thing more uncomfortable, and it's not helping anything. And so finding a way to be aware of that and kind of regulate it.
You also do meditation though, don't you?
I do. I've been quite bad at that recently, and actually it's on my I really want to get back into that because I have always found that really helpful.
I've seen it also interesting, like, now that you've finished, you know, the feature. Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Now you've started to get back into this routine of, like, not rushing into something new.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I've realised that I am quite bad at relaxing, and I think I need to learn how to relax.
Have you heard of active relaxing?
Well, this is... I haven't, but this is what... please tell me more.
Yeah, cool.
So I can't remember who said that that's what I am, but it's definitely what I am. Sitting down and doing nothing makes me stressed.
Yeah,
me too.
So I'm like, what am I doing? I hate
Absolutely.
It. So, like, but if I've got a little job to do, and it doesn't have to be anything in particular. Like, I'll just do stuff. Like, a weekend, my wife's idea of relaxing is sitting and reading a book for, like, 2 days straight, and that would drive me mad. Like, I'd be so full of energy and be like, oh, my God, I feel horrible. I don't know what it'll be, but I'll fill my time with, like, little things. Mm-hmm. And then at the end of it, I'm like, I'm nice and tired and relaxed. And it's just like my version of it is just to keep moving.
Yeah, little projects that aren't necessarily related to my job.
Yeah, like completely irrelevant to what you're actually doing. And they don't even have to really achieve anything, I find. It's just like something to do.
Oh, absolutely. I'm thinking of cooking, actually, is something that I kind of want to get into a little
you
bit.
You really achieve something with that as well. You get a meal at the end
of it. Well, exactly. Yeah. You cook.
Yeah. Like, well, if you want to make cakes and things and bring them into the gym, that's totally cool.
I've never
baked anything in my life. Apart from, I think, when I was like a kid or like food tech or something.
Yeah.
I've never baked. So maybe I should give it a go.
Bring us some biscuits.
I think also there's something about being very methodical about something, which is more relaxing.
Yeah,
there's no chaos.
You don't want actually you're looking for something that isn't chaotic. You're looking for
you're just doing what it tells you to do on that bit of paper.
Prepare everything and then follow the steps and that is meditative because you're really like you have to be in the moment. You have to
fully
concentrate
present
on what you're doing, fully present.
Definitely.
So you know a bit of that's what my project is to learn to relax, and I think some of that is I think it's more complicated when you love your job in a way, or like you do something that you really enjoy because you get a lot of pleasure from it. And so in a way, not doing it feels counterintuitive. So I think what I'm going to try and do is work in a little bit of kind of light work on a new project, like do an hour a day, go for a walk, come back, write down what's in your head, like, and then put it aside. Okay. And then a little bit of a mix of like some active stuff. I'm a gamer, so like, but it works for me if I just put a little bit of time in where I'm like, this part of the day I'm going to sit on the couch, I'm going to play some video games,
and shoot some zombies.
Exactly. That's what I'm doing now. Last of Us Part
2. Last of Us Part 2 is it out? I didn't even know.
That's what I'm on at the moment.
I have no reference point for any games. I don't understand it at all. I need to go and active relax.
Absolutely love it. There's something about gaming that's like active relax. I mean, yes, you're not really achieving anything, but like. Games are something where you have to be fully present
and
as
also
well when you're playing.
It can increase your stress levels during the roof.
People get that's hooked true. Into that, like, spend days though, don't they? Like, it can. Have you ever had that where it's like you've started a game and you've just got drawn into that?
I did that Red Dead Redemption in COVID. I probably spent like a week's worth of hours in 2 weeks on that game.
Yeah. I've done that before.
Really?
That's where it can be a little dangerous. But, you know, sometimes if you've got that period, and sometimes you do just want to give into that.
Let it go.
But active relaxing, that's it.
That's the plan.
Quite often we are the people that the actors get sent to in order to fit a certain role. So that will have been like written into the script, I guess, like the description of a character. Is it ever something that you consider in terms of how can I shape this person and get this actor to represent the character I've written without being like, I need you to change this or I need you to change that?
A big part of it is when you create a character, when you're writing, you often imagine, you pick someone, sometimes you pick someone you know, or maybe an actor that you know, or something. You have an image of them. And then I think when it comes to that part and you're casting and you're working out who's going to play them, it's about differentiating between what's actually important to the story and the character and what's just something that you've kind of created in your head that doesn't really have a solid purpose. On Industry, I remember there was a character that was always talked about as being a little overweight, but actually when it came to it, how it's been cast, it's the opposite.
It was unnecessary.
Because actually it didn't really mean anything concrete to the story, and it works exactly the same way whether he's bigger or smaller. And it was just sort of, it was an aesthetic choice that had kind of come in and we'd all stuck in our heads. But then making this film, it's a thriller, there's a sense of threat between these two characters. There was a physical relationship and a dynamic that we need to create between them. And when we first met the two actors, they had such amazing chemistry and they were so, like, so good for the characters. But they were the opposite of what we sort of wanted. Needed.
That's a great example of where, like, the art, in a sense, of their ability of actors, is you're like, these are the guys.
Yeah.
And their physical body at that period in time was obviously not the right fit, but it didn't kind of stop anything from happening.
No, you could see it between them in the relationship when they played it, but... And then I think when you're looking at what they need to look like, it's not about being specifically like, I imagined this. It's just about, like, what means something to the story, what's contributing visually and in performance, and also how the actors feel about themselves and what they need. Because sometimes they'll go, actually, if I had this, I would feel a little better in terms of, like, stepping into the shoes of this character. And so I think it's about... digging into that. So we were never like, this character should be blonde, or, and actually I think there was in the script at one point that the Nathan's character at the very start of the film, we'd written that he was bleach blonde at the beginning, and like ultimately we didn't do that because on the scheduling and how we shot it was just going to be an absolute nightmare to try and make him bleach blonde without like a wig that would look bad, or also it wasn't in, the blondness was not important. What was important was that there was a change, so we found a different change to put in. So I think it's about like digging into what is essential, what means something to a viewer when they're experiencing the story, and they are kind of like instinctual understanding of what we're seeing and what's happening on the screen.
That's it. You almost have to get into the audience you're pitching to, get into their subconscious and be like, how do you think they're going to look at these two? It's not the obvious stuff, it's the stuff that you look at without even realizing, and you're like, oh yeah, look, that he definitely beat him up or something. Like you have to have that in your brain.
It's instinctual usually. It's like on a gut level. You don't want to have to work it out. You want to see an image and immediately feel something about it. Mm. And that's, you know, I think that's just kind of effective storytelling.
Yeah,
and I think we definitely learned that. Because obviously also when you're creating something, you want it to be complex. You don't want it to be archetypal or cliched, or it feels like you've gone for the obvious choice. But also sometimes on things like this, we've realized a few times, if you make it too complex or you try and go too against the grain, actually you're creating a confusing story. It doesn't 100%. Read. People just go, oh, I didn't get that. So we did think about that. There's a line in the film where someone refers to someone as being trade, which is a queer term for kind of someone who's kind of hot in quite a like rough kind of way. All of the like queer members of crew got it and loved it, but every like straight member of crew either didn't understand it, or like had, or worse, had like an actively misunderstood what it meant. They were like, oh, does that mean he looks like cheap? And we're like, oh no, okay, actually, is this line? Because it was a really like, it was just like a throwaway line off to the side, and then you have to make a decision, because like, this is authentic and we love it. At the same time, if it's actively confusing the story for certain members of the audience, is it important enough to leave it in there if people are going to think that he's saying the opposite of what it's meant to? And I think ultimately we didn't use the line because we thought, maybe, you know. So you look for places where that stuff is important and is enriching the film.
Absolutely.
And then
I kind of like the idea of like half the crew being straight and just putting their hand up and being like, can I just check what that means, please?
But it's a big part of kind of thematically in the film. This character moves between kind of this world, a queer world, and a very like heteronormative, hyper-masculine world when he's in the world of this other guy, and he's kind of infiltrating it. And it was interesting because the crew was kind of half and half, so it was almost like the two characters meeting each other in the crew. The art department was super queer, and then like a lot of guys on like kind of lighting team. It was a more traditionally kind of butch crowd, but they were also the art department and the camera, they were working so closely together, and they were kind of interacting, and there was a real like...
Is that quite normal on a set, that division?
I could not tell you.
I guess you wouldn't know, would you? You wouldn't know.
I've not been on enough of them. I think camera department traditionally in our past has been a very like kind of straight man heavy. Ours wasn't. We made effort to make sure that we were trying to subvert some of those expectations.
There's definitely been a big push for that, hasn't there? In like, it's been a talking point in press and trying to make it more of an inclusive environment and everything.
Yeah, I think these things, like, if no one's thinking about them, they just, they fall into a pattern. It's not malicious. It's no one's like, I don't think anyone was, well, I mean, I can't speak for this because I don't know everyone, but you can see how sometimes it's not people trying to exclude. It's just they're not actively thinking about, because you know, you've got your guys, you know them, you bring them back, and you're like, actually, where's the gap to let some, to bring some people in? Mm-hmm. So we were really conscious of that on the film. And actually, it created an amazing environment. Like, sure, that was something that I think we were all really proud of, that actually there was a lot of passion. It was, you know, it's a first film, and we were being quite ambitious what we're trying to do, and actually it felt like everyone came in every day, like, and kind of loved it, and the dynamic on set was really great. And, you know, maybe part of that was that it wasn't a completely kind of traditional set.
Yeah. I think those environments are always great, where it's like there is a thought of helping people to find their way through in any kind of setting, whatever the job is. From listening to like sporty podcasts, you hear it a lot about like the young academy kid coming into like the first team environment, and you get a few of the guys that have been in that world, because it's such a strange world, coming and going, like,
shoulder kind of
thing. I'll walk you around and just explain how things work and what happens here.
Exactly. And I think, you know, we were first timers in the feature space, and we'd made one short, so we were very much coming in. The whole thing was a learning experience for us.
You were the academy
kids coming
in
and being like learning. Exactly. So we looked for a real mix of kind of experience, but also, you know, because we were new and we were being allowed into that space, we wanted to bring less experienced people in, and particularly people who had authentic experience of the worlds that we were creating, because then they naturally bring that. And I think our approach to directing the film was that what we were really confident on going in is that we both knew how to tell a story. And actually, what's great on a film set is that you take that vision and that storytelling knowledge, that's your expertise, and then you have people in each of the departments who know their craft and the technical side of their craft really well, and then help you to actualize the vision. So you have to trust everyone to go away and do the work, and then they bring it in and you discuss it or talk it all through, and, you know, making sure that there were people who were going to bring those kind of extra points of creativity where they're like, I know this world, and have you thought about this?
Is there anything that you would think, like, I mean, we've spoken about it in the gym before, the nature of the things that you do require quite a large amount of, like, courage to take from like an idea or a script and start to share it with people and show people. I remember we were talking about ways that you kind of overcome that, because a lot of people, I think, kind of want to start doing something in a creative world and get sort of apprehensive about it and maybe hold themselves back from doing it.
Yeah, I mean, I think it is, in a way, it is as simple and as horrible as that. You know, as a, like, from writing, I've had quite a lot of experiences of that, which is the first time you have to give your script to someone to read. It's horrible.
Yeah.
Because you are, like, it's so personal, and you are just handing someone something and giving them permission to think that you're an absolute idiot when they read it, and it's awful.
Is that your first thought? Like, this guy's going to think I'm an idiot?
Oh, yeah, it's so embarrassing handing over your script the first time. It really is. You're just like, oh, my God.
They have no context or anything. You're like, I've written this thing.
Yeah.
I'm like, read it.
You really feel like you're giving people permission to judge you, and you just kind of get used to it the more you do it. Like, that's it. You just have to grit your teeth and do it the first time, and then
the feeling is always there, but you kind of learn how to cope with it or live with it.
The film, I suppose, in a way, usually when you're handing over a script, it's like a first draft, you know, so that you come in with that, there's at least that element of it's just my first go. I just threw it out there, I just put whatever's in my head on a page. You know, it's not finished or whatever, and they can read it. You go, yeah. No, I knew that bit was bad. Obviously, showing the film for the first time
in front of a crowd,
you're like, no. I think this is good.
Yeah. Well, you had to literally go on stage, didn't you? You guys did like a Q&A afterwards.
Yeah.
Remember, I saw you, was it the day before you flew to Berlin? You came in.
I was terrified.
And you were definitely like, you could see it, that you were just like, oh, shit.
That was absolutely, like, actually the film itself, I'm really proud of. You know, I think when you make something, I mean, it's all so subjective, isn't it? So I felt happy that we had made a film that I would love. Like, I felt confident of that. Mm-hmm. I was like, if I watched this, I would love it. And I think that's all you can do. Yeah. And that's kind of the proudest you can be, really.
A few people being like you that will also love it.
You hope that people have a, you know, there are people, it finds, you know, people who have this, a similar taste to you, or they feel the thing that, you know, you want to feel from it. The only thing you can really do is go, would I like this? Mm. So all of my anxiety was fixed on, like, talking to press or doing a Q&A, and we had to do the Q&A. It was like, it's all that, like, you do like a full day of press. There's a, and then you do like a press conference where you have to sit at a table and there are cameras at you. And I said something kind of mortifying at the beginning. And then
I was going to, is this something we can get into for our embarrassing stories?
Yeah, okay.
Exactly. So part of the podcast, we always make someone say, and it's very loosely gym-based sometimes. Most of the time they occur outside of the gym.
Yeah, this one's not... Okay, I can do
but
that.
But this feeds in lovely.
Story.
It's very, very nice transition into the embarrassing story, so you can take it away then.
So we'd done this full day of the press, and actually that had gone quite well. We'd had, like, they'd given us, like, media training before we'd gone, smart, which actually was the most terrifying thing. And we worked with this woman called Angela, who was amazing. But basically what she did was, we had a chat at the beginning where she talked about that she'd watched the film, and she was like, here are the areas that they might, you know, if someone wanted to trip you up, mm-hmm, or like wanted to come in hard, this is where you might be asking questions. And she just basically like sat you in a chair and put like a camcorder on you.
It's like interrogation.
Yeah, it was. She turns the camera on and she starts asking you the questions, and she does it like she's a newsreader and you're a politician. So it's hardball the whole way, and she's listening to she's so good at it. She's listening to everything you say and then follows up on it and goes, okay, but so-and-so, like picking someone, kind of a famous expert in the field, mm-hmm, would say this. Are you saying that person's wrong? Or like, you know, and you're like, oh, no, I wouldn't.
I'd be terrible at that.
Yeah,
that's horrible.
It's, you know, and she just, like, everything you say, she's like, okay, but then you said this earlier, but in an interview earlier on here, and you just, like, you absolutely just fall apart the first time. Mm. And then you do it a second, you talk through, you watch yourself back, which is horrible. Yeah. And then you do it a second time, and actually suddenly you've learned a few strategies and you immediately feel much better. And I think we'd had quite a good day on the press stuff, because actually none of it, everyone was there to be nice, and the response to the film had been great. And you go into this press conference where you're sat at a table like what you see on TV, and there are cameras in the back, and someone tells you it's being live streamed, rather than people just recording you and writing it down and they can edit later. It's like this whole thing's going to be watched. So I sit down at this chair, and you've got these like microphones that like go right into your face, and something slightly uncomfortable about it. And I remember I just turned to George, who was sat next to me, and I was like, oh, it's a bit phallic, isn't it? Because like the mic is like right up at your mouth, and it does, you know, it is sort of shaped like a penis. And I didn't think any more of it. It was just a little joke to him. I came out, and we had like a dinner before we went to the premiere, and I saw my boyfriend. He was like, I was watching the live stream. Do you know the mics were on at the beginning?
You first really thing you said.
Clearly hear you say, it's a bit phallic, isn't it? Just like broadcast to the whole thing. I was like,
at least you didn't know that like instantaneously.
Yo, that would have been,
then you would have been like, oh, God.
Yes.
It's all right. I thought it was quite funny, actually. But
I reckon people probably quite liked it, because it just shows you like there's like sense of humour there.
You endeared the whole crowd to you with that one.
That's a good one. I like that one. What's coming up next for you then? Press tour of it, or there's other festivals to do?
What happens now, they do distribution deals, so it kind of, every, you know, buyers have seen it, and the film then goes to various, I think, companies, distribution companies buy up territories, and they go, I will distribute this film in America or the UK or like, mm-hmm, certain parts of Europe, or, and so they do deals on that, and then from there you kind of work out what your cinema release date might be and all of that stuff. And then I think once it's with a distributor, they will then make a decision about kind of more festivals, or there's a whole strategy that comes with it.
Yeah.
And to be honest, like on this, we've kind of, yeah, a little bit. So the next project is in the works.
Ooh.
But also the next project is, like we said, a bit of active relaxation, because it's been, you know, it's been 3 years on the film. And during that, I was also working quite intensely on, I was in a few rooms and writing on some shows, and you get to a point where everything's finished, and yet it's almost like your body's so used to the adrenaline that it almost stays in that pattern. I was so fidgety after we'd finished and there was nothing to do. I'd be checking my phone or like just pacing, or, and there was nothing really to be anxious about at that point, but it's almost like that energy just kind of, your body gets so used to it that you, it's almost like it's generating it for nothing.
So
I think that's like, and that's what all like exercise and all of this stuff is so good for, is like finding your way back to kind of like bringing the pace down.
It's like a release valve for that anxious energy. I think that there is, it's going to be there, it's going to build up and it's going to manifest in some way. That's one of the major benefits I always talk about. It's not about like being a bodybuilder or running a really fast marathon or whatever. It's just, it makes you feel a bit better.
Well, that's I think I did a session just before we recorded this. I think that was the best thing we could have done.
Oh yeah, 100%.
Because you just actually always leave feeling really like relaxed and like kind of leveled out.
That's our secret.
Yeah.
Thank you very much for coming on. And
chatting. Thanks for having me.
It's been great. It's been so interesting to kind of learn the process from your point of view. Our job is generally built off matching, trying to bring a person to represent what is on a script, and you're coming at it from the other side is super interesting. And I've really enjoyed it. Thank you very much.
Thank you guys so much.
Next week on Before the Lights, Jacob Anderson.
I'm here on an apology tour.
I wrote it down as the man that hates exercise, Jacob Anderson.
It turns out exercise is good physically and mentally.
That sound, you said that as if we're like pointing a gun at you.
Yeah. Say this.
I really enjoy it, and I especially enjoy training with you, George, and Dave, and Josh, and other George.
Good.
Well, thanks for the glowing reference and the glowing review.
Yeah, you've done.
You are welcome.